This is art not brought to you by the Chamber of Commerce. This is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Look at where I come
from. Look at who I came with. The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a new episode of original programming.
I can. How long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand.
Tuning in to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg, and you're hearing that song. You know you're listening to the Hope Valley of No Fixed Address show, and as I said many times, I sometimes want to change my theme song, but that song still gives me shivers and makes me want to do the show, because it's about commitment to what you're doing and to what you love. Today, I have a guest on the show who's been on a number of times, but it's always important to hear what Jacob has to say. For one, and for the most important reason, is that he and I are both lived experience brothers, and it's so important to hear the voice of lived experience on issues that are pertinent in our sector, like homelessness and poverty and addictions and mental health and things like that. Jacob, how are you? Hello, Jacob.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Can you hear me?
You're there? Yeah, I can hear you now.
Awesome. Great. How you doing? I'm good.
Good. Always good to have you on air. And, you know, like, we don't really have to explain things to each other because we've been down this road before. We know what each of us are talking about for the most part. And yeah. As I've asked you in the past, maybe just give a bit of a brief bio on your history and what you are comfortable sharing to where you are today.
So, hi, everyone. My name is Jacob Kaufman. I am a person with lived experience. I grew up in between Vancouver and Squamish, BC, in foster care in the 80s, early 90s, where it wasn't so much of a good time, shall we say. I'm not going to get into what happened to me over the radio, but it led me to run away at a very early age and end up on Hastings and Granville Street in Vancouver, where I met my unsheltered family, and they took me in and they taught me how to survive. They showed me love, discipline. From there, I moved to Winnipeg about 26 years ago now, and for the last 17, 18 years, I've been working at different shelters across North America, different safe injection sites, just different places to give back to my unsheltered family and people who happen to use different substances. So it is my passion. 2 months ago, my partner and I made the decision to move out of Winnipeg, and we are now located in Pine Falls, Manitoba.
Awesome. It's probably a big change from the city, I would think.
Oh, my goodness. It's so quiet out here.
And some peace, you know, not given the everyday controversy of what goes on in the city.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, I've experienced burnout recently in the last 6 months, and it was pretty bad, and I had to walk away and come to where I could just relax and get my head on straight to get back to helping people. But most importantly, we have given so much to the community, to our homeless brothers and sisters. I'm tired, and it was time to do something for me.
Yeah, you
and get my head back together.
Yeah, so. You are smarter than I am. I still haven't managed to give myself the care I need and what I need to. To be strong, and every once in a while, about 3 times a year, I burn out, and then I have to take a week or two off and just to recuperate and all that. Our business is tough. It's unkind and unforgiving, and there's not a lot of bright spots and so many not so bright spots, and or should I say bad spots, and with people dying on the streets and things like that.
I agree, Al, but the thing that always keeps me going is the one or two people that I truly help throughout my life, throughout my career, whatever
entirely,
you want to call it.
Entirely. Yeah. I totally agree with you on that one.
Yeah. So now that I've gotten away and kind of got my head back on straight a bit, I am still working in the field out here and still doing a bit of consulting and naloxone training. I just I love it out here. It is just so peaceful.
Yeah, so good to hear, Jacob. I'm glad that you found your peaceful place, and that you can move forward, because sometimes it's really difficult to move on from a state of burnout. And I'm glad you found that place. And one of the big tragedies of the homeless life is addictions, of course, and it's really a misunderstood issue, I think, in a lot of ways, and people don't understand why people get addicted, and I always feel I simply am not qualified to speak on it, because I've never had an addiction. If I had an addiction on the street, I wouldn't be here today, because I was never that strong. And so I actually sometimes admire people who have addictions on the street, who last years and years and years, because it's so tough, right? But I also appreciate the direction you've gone in working with people on the street and working with addictions. Talk to me a little bit about the very controversial subject that nobody can seem to get straight, and that is harm reduction.
So essentially, Al, it's one of those buzzwords that that have been thrown around the last 6-7 years.
Without a doubt.
And along with words like low barrier and just fancy buzzwords. But the truth about harm reduction is that anything that reduces any kind of harm is truly harm reduction. And in the homeless field, it could be as much as walking by someone. If you don't have change, which a lot of us don't, just say hi to someone.
Yes.
Just talk to them. Hey, what's your name? How are you doing? Just spend 5 seconds talking to them. That's harm reduction. There's also a lot of controversy, especially in the addictions field, about harm reduction. Let's talk about safe injection sites.
Yeah.
Safe smoking sites.
Yeah.
The community outside of our field tends to think that for some reason people go there to get drugs and they're given drugs and all that stuff. That is not the case. There is, if that was the case, I'd say 99% of ex-opioid users who've been clean would be going back there for their free drugs.
Yes.
Stuff like that. Just things that really harm the community is that we look at addiction and harm reduction mainly in a homeless lens. Only unsheltered people are addicted. And it's that's not the case. It's everyone. Harm reduction for me is just treating people like people and not being a crappy person. I know that I fail at that sometimes because I am rather controversial at times with things I think, but it's just we have to start looking through a true harm reduction lens.
Yeah.
Anything that will reduce any kind of harm, especially in this field, housing is harm reduction.
Of course.
We are going through a little bit of fun stuff here in Manitoba with the new housing strategy.
Yeah.
And different organizations who just tend to be confused occasionally about the word harm reduction when it comes to housing people.
Yes.
And, like, we have to come up with new solutions. We have to come up with better solutions, better housing solutions, taking people out of encampments who, and controversy here, who, number one, really aren't ready to be taken out, don't want to be taken out, and then throwing them in an apartment by themselves.
Yep.
We can tell you firsthand, and you know firsthand how
horrible
the first few months of getting off the streets
and you know,
with the isolation.
Absolutely. You know, I went through a most difficult time. You know, I lived in River Heights. I lived in really nice houses and areas and things like that. But the first year of being back housed after 29 months on the street were really, really, really hard to stay there. And the only thing that kept me there was that I brought Shara to the Salvation Army, and she needed somebody to look after her. That's the only thing that kept me. I had no supports, and but that's what kept me housed. Otherwise, I think I would have been back on the street.
Oh yeah, my last time going through detox, which was 26 years ago, the thing that kept me from going back is the fact that I moved to the middle of Canada. I moved to a city, Winnipeg. I love the city, where I really didn't know anyone, and no one knew me, and I isolated for a couple of years, really. But it was what I needed to do to get off. I did learn how to do my own harm reduction back then, because really, it didn't exist. Like, let's admit it.
No, it didn't. It did.
26 years ago, the homeless sector really sucked.
Well, in BC, they were miles ahead, but not here.
Yeah. It was, it's interesting. And it's interesting to see how far we've come, but we're still, especially in Manitoba, we are about 15, 16 years behind the rest of the country, the rest of the world.
We are when
it comes to homelessness and even with proper harm reduction.
It is. And, you know, a really, really good example was their first choice of putting harm reduction in, and knowing whether it's right or wrong, knowing the controversy that it would create by suggesting a place to install the first harm reduction facility right across from the school. Whether you think that's negative or whether you think that's good, it just showed that they just didn't have a good amount of judgment about it. I quite honestly, I'm on the fence about the school. Other than we don't want to see, you know, because people are going to draw so many judgments on it, right?
So I'm going to not comment on my feelings about the school part, but I will say it was setting the community up. The people who would use it, the safe injection site location, was setting them up for failure in the sense that for the last 3 years, and there's so many examples of this across North America, that is building resource centers and different places. That close to a school, that's what people are using as an excuse. Like, they can be built there, and there can be absolutely no issue with anything.
Of course.
But this is how the government and different politicians and city people are shutting them down in masses, is that they're like, oh, look, it's by a school.
Yeah, so exactly.
There's some awesome places to put it. I would... Honestly, I just want to see it open. Want to see one open in Manitoba.
And given the way we progress in the lightning speed that the province does on everything, I think it's going to be a while.
It unfortunately is. Manitoba is I love Manitoba. Mm-hmm. Manitoba is my home now, but we're just too far behind.
Yeah.
And we still have... look at things through a very colonial, anti-harm reduction lens.
Yeah, we do here, without a doubt. One question, too, is, and I'm puzzled by it because I don't know enough about it, and this is why I'm asking, because I don't speak on things, try not to speak on things I don't know about or make an opinion on. What is your opinion on putting a harm reduction unit in a shelter?
They work. Let's make no mistake, Al. Mm-hmm. Every single shelter is already a safe injection site. Well, not so safe injection
site. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Almost every single bathroom across Winnipeg, public washroom or even private washroom.
Yes.
Like, everyone is doing drugs.
They'll find a place, right?
Yeah, lawyers, doctors, police officers, everyone is doing drugs everywhere, and... I think it causes so much harm to pretend that doesn't happen. When I worked in Surrey, for example, we had a safe injection trailer right outside the shelter.
Okay.
We had a safe smoking tent in the back in the courtyard of the shelter, and not one person's died.
And you know what? That would never work here. Because the province wouldn't allow it.
The province wouldn't allow it, and as well, organizations and people's opinions wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
Some organizations, they like to boast about harm reduction and how they're a low barrier facilities, but like, man, people getting searched when they walk into a shelter.
Yeah.
Elderly men and women, grandmas, mothers, and grandfathers, having their belongings poured out.
Well, we know one housing provider that does that every single time a person goes out for a cigarette.
I just
don't think that's the way it should be. But
hell no, that is not harm reduction. That is causing harm. So we got to look at stuff differently. Also, with harm reduction, like if you take a shelter, and you as a staff member decide that all the other staff are going to stop cleaning that shelter.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to stop taking care for that shelter. They're just going to be there to hang out with the community members.
Right.
You will find that within a month, there's going to be some major bumps, but within a month, that they are going to be cleaning the shelter. They're going to be painting and fixing the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's truly what harm reduction is. But we as people don't want to empower.
But, you know, it comes down to empowering people.
Yeah.
Right?
And
believing in them and trusting them to do the right thing and not assuming that they're going to do the wrong thing all the time.
Exactly. But everyone always assumes they're going to do the wrong thing.
Exactly.
And even if they do the wrong thing or what we see as the wrong thing once or twice, and then we tend to just throw them away permanently. It's gross. Like, true harm reduction is getting rid of harms. Mm-hmm. And one of the main harms is not allowing people to feel like a shelter is their home.
Mm-hmm.
Like
no, exactly.
a house or an apartment that we put people in, it's not their home when at any point, say if we work for certain organizations, we could just walk up to the apartment and we have keys and let ourselves in.
Yep.
That's not harm reduction. That is causing more harm, and that's why the recidivism, mm-hmm. I'm going to steal a term that we use for prisons, that's why the recidivism rate is so high, is one of the main reasons I feel is that people don't feel like it's their home.
I call it the retention rate, or none. Yeah. That's my simple term. I can't even pronounce that other word. I totally agree with you. Folks, you're listening to CKOW 95.9 FM. You're home at the University of Winnipeg, and you're listening to No Fixed Address. We're just going to pause for a two-minute music break, Jacob, and folks, and we'll be right back. So, Jacob, hang in there. Your host on the Hope Alley No Fixed Address show. The show about advocacy for people living in homelessness, poverty, and the vulnerable in the city as a whole. And we know there's such a struggle every single place when it comes to people who really need help from the city and the province and the federal government who just simply aren't getting it. So we have to have a voice, because sometimes people can't speak for themselves, and Jacob is one of those voices as well. And my guess is Jacob Kaufman, a person with lived experience like myself, which really connects us. And we're talking about his area of expertise, or one of them, and that is addictions. Let's go to BC for a second and, you know, talk about that. Why are they so far ahead of us, you know? I whenever I go to BC, I force myself to go, or I don't force myself, because I also have friends at Carnegie Center there, and I work with them. But it's a tough place to visit, because I feel despair when I go there, because I see a lot of folks that may never get out. And with the cost of living in Vancouver people having the inability to find places. And I'm not happy when I go down there. But the bright spot is that they do have a really good needle exchange program. They have really great harm reduction programs. And as I say, very often when I'm training, it's as busy at 2 o'clock in the morning as it is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because people are getting help, right?
Yeah. So, oh God.
Go ahead.
I love my home. I love BC. I love Vancouver. But yeah, the reason that they're so far ahead is mainly because they're on the coast. The same reason why Ontario, Montreal, those places are so far ahead of the middle of Canada is because everything hits there first.
Yes.
So if you look at the fentanyl crisis in BC, it hit BC and the coast first, the other coast, Montreal, yeah. Ontario, that area. And just since COVID, we're beginning to see the baby steps into the opioid crisis happening here. So in Vancouver, they've had like 20 years, 30 years with the heroin or any kind of opioid issues. So they're the reason that they're so ahead is they're used to it. Yes. Yes, they make mistakes. They still make a lot of mistakes. Vancouver different places are not the be-all and end-all, but they learn from their mistakes. What we're doing right now in Manitoba is that certain issues are popping up more and more. Not safe drugs coming out. But we're not looking at other provinces and how they dealt with it. We're trying to come up with solutions to deal with it ourselves. And quite frankly, it's not working and it's causing more harm. We need to take a step back. We need to look how BC, and not just the opioid crisis, the homelessness crisis out there. Their shelters, most of them, have beds. Like actual beds. They have lockers. They have options for people to stay there all day. It's their bed.
No, here we can't do that.
Well, we can do that, but we don't want to do that.
We don't do that.
Yeah, we don't do that. We could. The shelter system here could, but they don't want it. So, because we're too busy trying to figure out Manitoba solutions to issues that aren't indicative to Manitoba. This has always been one of my big critiques about living out here is that homelessness, addiction, mental health, it's not just exclusively here.
Yeah,
it's happening in other places.
Of course it is. And quite honestly, I feel that there is some arrogance with the city and the province, because they're not seeking out. And, you know, for example, the provincial strategy, there was no pre-consulting being done about that. And so what happens is you come up with a strategy that's not sound and not human rights-based. And same thing, you know, with the city. You know, neither you or I I would say, to the actual leaders in this city and in this province on lived experience. I just certainly didn't get that call, and I know that you didn't from either the city or the province, and they make silly comments like, we're going to end homelessness in 8 years. It hasn't been ended in 800 years, and it's not going to end in another 800 years.
I just want to quickly say something about what you just said about ending homelessness.
Yes.
There was a certain organization in the city, and I saw an interview with them on TV 25 years ago when I first came here.
Yeah.
And they were talking about their big strategy.
Their 10-year plan.
They're going to end homelessness in 10 years.
And they're only at second 10.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that.
That didn't work. Homelessness, unfortunately, as a core, has been around since pretty well the beginning of time.
Yes.
Since one caveman decided he didn't want another cave person living in the cave and kicked him out.
Or his wife kicked him out.
Or his partner, their partner kicked him out, yeah. But it's, and the reason it's not working out here is because we did not consult, forget it. Like, you and I are a wealth of knowledge, right?
Yes, yeah.
But they didn't consult the people on the street about it. They didn't. They can pretend and lie and say they did. Every bit of work, everything I talk about comes from the street.
Yes.
Comes from my family who is still unsheltered. I hear from them, but they didn't want to do that. They wanted to pick people to make the strategy who've never been homeless and quite frankly who've never struggled.
And quite honestly, they also consulted people after the fact that they put this in place. After the fact, not before.
Yep. Nope. They just came out out of the blue with this plan, and like, in theory, it could work. But the issue with it is, number one, we don't have enough different kind of housing in Manitoba.
We do not.
We need every different kind of housing. We need housing, honestly, with the community that wants to live there, with big fences around it where they don't let other people in. It's just them. We need that kind of housing. We need Indigenous housing. We need newcomer to Canada housing. We need housing where people can smoke weed and not worry about getting kicked out.
Yeah.
We need people or housing with managed alcohol and managed drug programs where people can get go in at, say, 8 a.m. They get one can of beer or one shot of whatever their alcohol is or their shot of whatever drugs they may use are, and then they go off and do productive kick-ass things and work and live awesome lives and slowly try to rebuild life, because that is kind of hard to do, especially if you have any kind of criminal record after you get off the street.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm happy that, our program is as innovative as it can get in regards to different ways of life, different ethnicities, different issues of addictions and mental health issues and ethnicity issues. It's so important to cater to what the person needs. Be innovative, be creative, but listen to what they need, right? And that's the problem. Our city and our province doesn't. And and the whole problem is they get on air and say really things that show their naivete about it, and that really frustrates me, because you should not be talking about an issue that you know nothing about.
And like how when I first came to Winnipeg and started working a few years ago, a certain organization came out and they brought a news crew down to encampments, and they were referring to these encampments as meth camps.
Yes, I remember that very, very clearly. Yes.
Not every person on the street does crystal meth. Like, it was devastating to the community, and now, to this day, there's still people being assaulted. Their tents are being set on fire. They're being arrested. There's rumors being spread about them because, it's just a meth camp. No, it's not. It's somebody's home. It doesn't matter what they do there.
Exactly. And I've heard that the city is renewing their warrants. Peace again. Going into camps and several times a day with warrants. to see who's in there. And again, a huge violation of human rights. And I would say, like, how would you like it if Mr. and Mrs. Miss Counselor, if the police knocked on your door 5 times a day to see if you're hiding anybody or anything, right?
Yep. Yep, they wouldn't like it very much. But again, they're the ones sitting in their fancy houses, eating fancy food. These are the people that are in charge that have never struggled. They've never had to worry about food. They've never had to wonder if the lights are going to be on, if we're going to have clean water.
Yep.
And we need more people, more peers. Mm. We need more peer voices. We need more voices of people who are on the street to tell us what we want instead of us telling them what they want.
I recently had a conference in Saskatoon, CHRA conference. I spoke to the executive director of a quote-unquote and homelessness whatever city. I won't say the city because then they may know who this person is. But executive director. And we have a conversation. I said, we're having these huge battles in Winnipeg over the encampments. And I said, you know, a third of those people are not comfortable going into housing. We have interviewed folks over and over again and talking about the provincial strategy because the province didn't talk to them. And so, and I said, okay, what would you go into housing if the province came in and offered you housing? And the answer is, but they give you a really, really a good place to live that was safe. And they said, hell no. And people don't understand. And this person says, oh, I have to take issues with what you're saying there. Meanwhile, this person has a master's degree or PhD in education or something, has never spent a day on the street, never spent a day in poverty. And she's trying to tell me that I don't know, as a person with this experience, that I know what I'm talking about, as a person who houses people, that I don't know what we're talking about. But there's so much of this arrogance going on that things cannot change when the people at the top have this attitude.
I fully agree. And to your comment about, like, how, like, you know better than anyone that they will only let peers go so far before they put our boot on our throat.
Entirely.
And I've experienced that.
Yep.
You've experienced that.
Yeah. I have a prime example at Central Park where I live. There started out to be one camp, and I think it has to do with the splash pad and the playground in Central Park, which are about 200 yards away, 300 yards away, and 100 yards away. But there was one tent in that camp, and they were really, really nice people, and I went out and gave them water and stuff. And you know, a week later, there was two, and then three, and now there was four. And, like, 2 days ago, I walked by, and there was none. Somebody came and swept them up, right?
Yep.
And but I also know that one of the safety patrols down there was visiting them quite frequently and in not such a friendly manner, so I'm thinking that it might have had something to do with that. But,
well, safety patrol should be set in quotation mark when it comes to Winnipeg.
Should be what?
Said in quotation.
Oh, yeah, yeah, in quote, yes.
Yeah, because honestly, like, I've just, through my experience, I see safety, quote-unquote, organizations going down and grabbing people's alcohol. Yeah, they shouldn't be drinking on the side of the road, but they pour it out in front of them.
Yeah.
Or they'll grab whatever substance they're about to use, and they'll throw it away. And they're like, oh, that's safety. That's not safety.
Yes.
You just set that person up to go do whatever it takes to get that back.
Yep. Without a doubt. And again, that leads to criminal behavior.
Yep.
Because they're taking their stuff away from them, right?
Yep. And, well, I tried, when I have worked in shelters, one of the big things that I did was when I saw people with drugs, I wouldn't take their drugs away from them.
That made you very popular, I'm sure.
Heaven forbid, you take someone's drugs away and then you throw them away, or alcohol, or whatever they're doing.
Yep. And guess,
in a shelter setting, you take it away.
Chaos.
What are the two quickest ways to make money?
Yep.
They're going to go out, they're going to commit a crime, or they are going to, unfortunately, do what I had to do growing up, and they'll exploit them. Or let them... They'll be exploited.
Yes.
Let's just leave it at that.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
In horrible ways. Mm-hmm. And it's just, that's not harm reduction. That's harm. You're causing harm.
Entirely.
I don't get certain things, and that's what really confuses me a lot of the time, is that why are we preaching harm reduction when we're doing things like that? Why are we preaching harm reduction, especially in the housing field, when we're not actually consulting with the people who want to be housed? Mm-hmm. With the unsheltered people, what we really need to do, I mean, look at Anita Place in Vancouver. That camp went for years, and the only reason it's not there now is the flood wiped it out. Why aren't we allowing people safe spaces to set up camp? Mm-hmm. In Winnipeg, in Manitoba, well, in different areas.
Yeah, and I go back to Halifax when I was there, and the two parks that they had set up for designated camps, and they had like 30 tents in each one, and they were clean and respectable, and they worked with the folks in the camps to make it that way, and they were safe. And the problem is, and they had communication with the people in the camps. The problem is, our city can't bring themselves around to having communication with people in camps.
Well, no, because it would take power away from them somehow.
Yes, yeah,
and that's where the harm comes. Is we want power. We're humans. Mm-hmm. We think we're above people. We're working in a shelter setting. Oh, we all have to wear the same shitty uniform. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I apologize. That's my one.
No, you know, I think wearing uniforms in a shelter is not the thing to do, it because it separates you. And I think that people want to know that they belong in a place, and they don't want to seem different than the folks that are working there. That's my belief system anyway.
You have people running around with military style walkie talkies on their hips, mm-hmm. or earpieces, or in some shelters you have people walking around with police utility belts on, mm-hmm. and earpieces. They look like cops.
Yep.
That's not reduction. That's
hard.
Come on.
You're right. Folks, it's what's the temperature out here? 20 degrees, 17 degrees currently in the city. And, you know, it's a cup for me. It's a comfortable, but it's a little bit breezy out there. Walking by Tim's, walking by Starbucks, walking by Robbins, buy an extra cup of coffee. That person that needs it. Today it's a choice between water and coffee, because it's in that in-between range, and neither one will hurt. But, you know, be kind. Let's not make people invisible. Let's do what we have to make their lives just a little more bearable on the street. Speaking with Jacob Kaufman, a advocate on homelessness and work for people who are vulnerable, and a clinician an expert on harm reduction, and is a trainer
I do training with a peer made naloxone program.
Naloxone, that's the word.
It's a seven-hour program.
It escaped me.
Talk about everything.
Yeah, awesome. Any last words you might want to say to our audience before we sign off?
Treat people like people.
Yes.
Harm reduction starts at home. Mm-hmm. If you're not treating your family in a way that is nice, that's not harm reduction. You're bringing that into work. Realize that not all humans are the same.
Exactly. And, you know, the same thing applies to housing. Number one, we don't have enough. But when we do, and when we are able to house people, it's really important to, and as you say, housing is harm reduction in a very different way, but it's harm reduction because we are taking people from the streets where the harm really is. That where it starts. It's everywhere, but where it starts, and if we can do what we can, and just give people the housing they need. Let's listen to their ethnicity. Let's listen to their stories. Let's listen to their ethnicity, what they need in to keep themselves grounded, even in a spiritual way, if that's what they need. And some people need it, some people don't. But, you know, it just seems like we've lost a person-centeredness. in a few ways. My producer, Debbie, here says that there is a big article in the Free Press this morning. I have to read it. It's on the encampments, and I think I'll go buy a newspaper right away. I have an embargo on my phone on it, so I have to go buy a paper. But I think that, you know, we need to, you and I and people who have a voice need to really get out there and do what we do to create more awareness.
Brian. I'm trying.
Yes, I know. we try as hard as we can because it's so important because lives are on the line many, many times, right? But Jacob, thanks for coming on air, and I can hardly wait to have another cup of coffee with you one day when you're in the city. Let me know, and we'll have coffee or lunch or something.
Yep. But I will talk to you soon, brother.
Yes. Take care. Bye.
You too.
Folks, that was Jacob Kaufman, a trainer of harm reduction and the harm reduction advocates. And a person with lived experience such as myself, his experience was different than mine. But there are different stories, but they're all the same. And some of us are fortunate enough to make it through and have a voice, and many, 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 many aren't. So this is why myself and Debbie are here every Friday when I make it into the studio to actually just bring a little more awareness to the problems on the street. And it's such a tough, complex issue, and so difficult to resolve, and it will never be resolved in my lifetime or anyone else's, my grandchildren's or their grandchildren's lifetimes. But I would say that, you know, we're never going to end it, but we can take one person off the street at a time and do exactly what we can and try our best, and that's all we can do. Society and the governments just don't allow for other, you know, for huge success rates. And the truth of the matter is, even if we had all the money in the world and all the federal government money and all the private money in the world that we needed, we could still not end homelessness, because we simply would not have the capacity to serve these people and give them the safeguards and the security that they need by being there every day for them. It's a tragedy, but that's just the way it is. And I say, people, take your rose-colored glasses off. We're not ending homelessness. Get that out of your system, because it's never going to happen. And I would say, if we ended 100 years ago, we would have and saved hundreds of thousands of lives. If we could have ended it 20 years ago or 10 years ago, we would have done it. When it was a lot cheaper to end it. But we just simply haven't had the desire or the ideology to do it. But folks, we're probably getting into the show just a little bit early to tell you. Debbie, anything you'd like to talk about? We have our symposium coming up on November 3rd, of which I hope Debbie's going to be there and involved in a little way. And I'm still getting stressed out about it. Still things to work on. Yeah, I think we'll get there. I only had a couple of speakers say they couldn't make it, a couple of sponsors, but it's moving ahead. It's really important to have a voice for those whose human rights are being abused. And this is what our symposium on November 3rd is all about. And we have some amazing speakers, just a couple that I can't remember them all, but all four shelter CEOs on one panel talking about the rights of the homeless. We have my keynote this year, most beautiful person is Christy Pearson, a former co-chair of the United Way campaign 2 years ago, who is part of the Pollard people, and who is the founder of Linking Hope, and they work out of 190 Israeli, and every day she's down there. She's a millionaire, but she's down there in the dirt every day, working with people on their needs and clothes and food and all that kind of stuff. And I have Bradley West, who's the founder of the Pride Parade way back in the day, and a former manager of the Equity and Diversity Program at the city, which the city somehow canceled, ended. I'm not sure about how that works, but he's going to be there. I'm still looking at, I had two people from my Indigenous leadership and my speaker's role, but they, Jason Whitford has left in almost Winnipeg and not available. Another person was not available. A third person was not available. So we're going to find somebody yet. I have a lived experience panel, a really good lived experience panel of people who are managers in the game and have come through and succeeded, because we need to bring that vision of lived experience to the people and let them know that we are not second-class citizens, but we are leaders, which is so often overlooked. I have, again, Marion Cooper from Canadian Mental Health Association, who's now the Executive Director of Canada for the Canadian Mental Health Association, and Shannon Menkes, who's the Executive Director of CERBRAIL. They're going to be sharing that panel. I have a person speaking on Advocates for Poverty, a person speaking who's a graduate of the Human Rights Program at the University of Manitoba speaking, and on and on and on. And the Canadian Center for Policy Initiatives, my friend Molly. I can't remember them all, sorry. But it's another, you know, really, really packed lineup, and the mayor is going to be there. As much as I criticize the mayor and Bernadette, they are both going to be at the event opening for me, so that's a good thing. But I'll fill you in on details later on as we go. It's still over a month away, and I still got lots of work to do. But folks, come back next week, and I will hopefully have another interesting guest on for you to listen to. If you have any comments on harm reduction, which is a really controversial issue, you can email me or phone the station and leave a message. But you can email me at albelieve, 27, the digits at gmail.com, or text me. And probably not supposed to do this, but 204-960-0335, the easiest way to get a hold of me. I don't always answer my emails right away, but my text I always do. So you can do that as well, or even give me a call if you want to. But not a million calls, please. But folks, come back next week. It's, again, 17 degrees out there. A beautiful, beautiful day for this time of year, almost October, and we're still experiencing great weather. But be kind. Buy a coffee, buy a tea, buy a water. Do what you can. See you next week.
The Beat on the Street is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, campus and community radio.
Support of CKUW is provided by the Western Cultural Center, your friendly local arts nonprofit, bringing you live music, community, and connection since 1987.
Roll around in the shadows like a cat in the light. I'm scared of everyone.
Tune in every Tuesday night starting at midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning to Night Danger Radio on CKUW.
Generous support to CKUW 95.9 FM is provided by Diversity Food Services. Diversity is a social enterprise committed to a just and fair food economy in Winnipeg. Elements Restaurant at 501 Portage Avenue is a proud part of Diversity Food Services family. A full-service, licensed sit-down restaurant with easy access right off of Portage Avenue.
Sometimes it's hard to see you every day. You're still my goddess, and I don't ever wanna not see you that way. Have we departed the part when we partially felt that we lost the faith? 'Cause that was hard on me, babe. You know that I want you badly. You know that I need you with me. I just wanna make you happy and not lose myself. Sometimes it's hard to feel good every day, but lately better than ever. I could forever just stay this way. Deep in love with you, babe. You know that I want you badly. You know that I need me. I just wanna make you happy and not lose myself. Yeah, you know that I want you badly. You know that I need you with me. I just wanna make you happy and not lose myself. Sometimes it's hard to see you every day. You're still my goddess, and I don't ever wanna see you that way.
I think I can see the light upon this fine. There's a face I know so well, and it shines, it shines, it shines. You've been looking around your town for too long. Dragging your feet around for too long, man. Red rest of blood from the faucet seal and the birdhouse view from the windowsill. I still remember that metallic taste from the old pipes at my parents' place. Well, water was wasn't all that bad. Well, I still remember.